It's time for Deputy Leader Fletcher Tabateau from the New Zealand First Party.
No, Fletcher, this week we spoke to Clayton Mitchell, spokesperson for Labour and Industrial Relations, about the Employment Relations Amendment Bill announced yesterday. I started by asking him to explain what this bill is all about.
The Employment Relations Amendment Bill, which was put together after the Coalition came together just over a year ago, was part of the 100-day plan to get a better balance between the employers and the employees as it was originally drafted. However, through that first reading period, we realised there were some unintended consequences of the bill, and so we went through the process of select committee, listened to submitters. We looked at ways that we could tidy up the bill to make sure that we weren't creating a rod for our own back, and that was around the MECAs, that's the multi-employment collective agreement part, and access to work sites. And so we came to a conclusion that a better output would actually be to give the employer the opportunity to opt out of these multi-employment collective agreements, because essentially what they would do if they were left the way they were intended to be left would be to put the cost structures of the cities and implement them into the regions and the provinces and those workplaces, and that just that was just going to be very, very bad for business, very, very bad for the provinces of New Zealand. So we've managed to remove that and given an opt-out clause, which we had previously. And secondly, it was about having access, unfettered access by the unions to workplaces, which can be potentially quite problematic. So we have got to a position where the unions can have access to workplaces where there are collective employment agreements in place or that are being bargained for. But other than that, the existing rules will apply where a union member has to give notice to the employer that they are intending to enter the workplace. Other things that the bill now does is actually gives workers meal breaks and rest breaks, and that's purely down to a health and safety issue. Under the previous government, they took away those rights for those meal breaks, and we believe that taking those meal breaks right the way was going to cause us some problems.
Could you just go into a bit more detail as to why it would be problematic for the regions in terms of, I think there was somebody's quoted in an article that big city union practices are not going to be rammed down the throats of the provinces. That was a Winston quote. What does that mean? Is it not helpful that unions are in these workplaces?
Well, look, the cost structures of living and working in Auckland are completely different to the cost structures of living and working in Invercargill, for example. And, when you want to work at a move to Auckland to just use a port or use a factory or use any industry, if you will, even hospitality. And if you've tied yourself into a multi-employment collective agreement, then if the rate that you're paying somebody in Auckland has to be collectively agreed to for a worker that's working in Invercargill, the cost structures of that business can't sustain that and would essentially create a collapse in the marketplace for those industries. And that's exactly what we've avoided by enabling businesses to opt out of a MECA.
So would that also apply in terms of, say, you're looking at much bigger companies or industries as opposed to much smaller ones, where we had, people often bring up the living wage as an example, right? And not everybody can pay a living wage. Does this deal with something like that as well?
Well, no, it's different to the living wage. Now, that's the New Zealand First policy that we've actually brought into this coalition agreement. We're actually working towards the introduction of a living wage. Interestingly enough, last year I went to Business New Zealand Deloitte's annual conference. They had about 300 or 400 top executives from all around New Zealand, and we discussed our policy. This is prior to the election coming out, saying that New Zealand First was intending on introducing the living wage, but we were going to, alongside that, and we are still, that's part of the coalition agreement, going to introduce a tax package for businesses to afford to be able to afford to pay for it, which is essential. Now, let me get that right, I think it was 94% of those people, when they were polled afterwards, agreed that the introduction of a living wage was essential for growing our economy from the bottom up. And that's something that we haven't done since the mid-1980s and prior to, where, you know, a fair day's pay was given for a fair day's work. And we want to bring those values back into this country. But the living wage is something completely different. But the tax package to enable businesses to be able to pay for it is part of that structure which we're bringing in.
But isn't that sort of same example in terms of Auckland being different to Invercargill and what that living wage looks like? Or are we working towards just getting a benchmark for everybody?
Well, you've got to take a median wage approach to that living wage, but you do right. The cost structures, again, in Invercargill are completely different to the cost structures of Auckland. But if you look at what those cost structures are going to be like, and a base wage at the moment is around about $20.55, if you're a business, no matter where you are, whether it be Invercargill or Kaitaia or Auckland, are going to be offset with tax package, then it doesn't matter. You know, the advantage would be to live in a more affordable part of the country and therefore incentivising the region to grow, which we haven't been seeing for a while. So it's a double positive if you think about that, because when we're driving people into our cities, it creates a lull in the marketplace for workforces and, you know, slows down our productivity. So paying better wages and getting a better cost structure for those provinces is actually a very good plan.
So the Council of Trade Unions president has said that this bill moves us away from a wage competition free market model, which is sort of what you said earlier, moving away from what perhaps the previous government had implemented. So we do have the core of this bill is a kind of ideological shift away from perhaps that neoliberal model. Is that true?
Oh, most definitely. In fact, if you listen to my speech in the House yesterday, after Paul Goldsmith spoke, I called them the neoliberal free market trickle-down ideologically driven National Party, which is a long way from home from where the National Party originally originated from. You know, we've got to come into a situation where we drive our economy from the bottom up, where the most unskilled, most unqualified worker can go out there and put their shoulder to the wheel and put a fair day's work in and expect a fair day's pay to ensure that they can actually sustain themselves and look after themselves. That's something that hasn't been happening for a long time. In fact, you listen to some of the backbenchers of the National Party saying, yeah, but they can get subsidies from the government, these people that don't earn enough to live. How demoralising is that as an answer, that you should be expected to go and hold your tin out waiting for the scraps off the table of the government to survive? I mean, it's just, you know, takes away people's manner and self-respect. We've got to get people to get into a position where they can actually look after, manage, maintain themselves and their family.
So is this actually looking towards trying to actually, you're trying to decrease unemployment even more? Does this kind of bill work towards that?
Well, look, we've got a very low unemployment rate, but what we do have in this country is systemic intergenerational unemployment. And, you know, this is what we're starting to see now in some parts of the country are worse hit than others. And, you know, we've seen grandparents unemployed and parents unemployed, and now you see the kids, the grandkids and so forth unemployed. And that's three generations of unemployment. What we've got to try and get is the incentive to get out there and work. And we've got a great safety net called the social welfare system in New Zealand, which I'm very proud to say we do have. Some countries don't have a social welfare system like we've got, but it was supposed to be a safety net to catch those people that sort of fell off the wagon, that, you know, were looking in between jobs looking. It's now turned into a bit of a hammock for some of those people. We need to get back to incentivising through stick and carrot to get those people out working. And when people can get out there and earn enough money to survive and support themselves and their families without having to go and get subsidies from the government, then you've got that self-respect and you've got the manner that it brings and the endorphins that it releases when you can get out there and work. So, yes, we want to incentivise people to get out there and work, and that's worth their while.
Okay, back to that ideological shift. So that some of the framing around since yesterday, since this announcement, has been because it's been also been called Labor's flagship workplace relations bill, has been delayed and softened to keep New Zealand First on board. So what is it that actually you guys, I know you mentioned the regions and that sort of thing, but what is it that has created this less of a bill for workers?
Look, the first thing is it hasn't been delayed. We discussed this literally a year ago today with the Minister as part of our 100-day commitment to this coalition government. We stuck to that. We put the first reading through the first week back in February last year at the earliest convenience, obviously, to draft up this legislation. We went straight into Select Committee, where it's been all year, where we've heard hundreds of submitters. We've listened to what those submissions have said. So we've come back to sit around the table to find out a way that we can actually make this work for all parties. And that's exactly what New Zealand First's role is in this government, to be a great moderator and to bring some balance back.
And then the softening part of it?
Well, it hasn't softened. You could say it's actually, it's taking a balanced approach. So softening is not what it is. Just not as harsh, I think, to one sector. We've brought that neutrality. We understand, and we've always said it. In fact, it's in our manifesto that we want fairness, flexibility and neutrality when we talk about the balance between employers and employees. And we believe that this bill now has that, which it didn't have when it was first drafted and put through.
So the 90-day trial, will that eventually go?
No, I don't think the 90-day trials will go, certainly not with New Zealand First in government. I think they play a very important role to give those people a chance that wouldn't otherwise have a chance. Finding the right mix in a business is very, very important. You can learn skills, but some people have personality traits that don't fit with other personality traits. They're not better or worse, they're just different. And I think where the 90-day work trial comes is to give somebody a go. Does your personality fit with the group of people that are currently working there? Some get on well, and like I say, you can learn skills, but you have personality clashes sometimes, and that's a perfect opportunity where you can say, look, you're not the right fit here. Smaller and medium-sized businesses don't have the same resources as larger businesses or different work pools, because you don't have 100 workers working in one area. You have groups of people in small stations working together in small groups of 6 to 8 people. So if you introduce a person in a large working environment and they're not quite a fit with this group, you can easily move them over and put them in another group, which is why the SMEs being exempt from the 90-day removal is important, because you are dealing with smaller groups of people and that aren't as heavily resourced. So we believe it's a very reasonable, pragmatic approach to business.
Is it not unsafe, though, for workers to have that be the only thing that's kind of keeping you in a job, whether your personality clashes or not?
Well, look, I've been in business for most of my life and run business myself. When you get the right mix of staff, you hold on to them with two hands. And in fact, I've had staff members working for me for over 20 years, which gives me the confidence to know that you build a family and an ethos and a values around employment. But equally, I've had people being introduced into my business that just are not a fit, that can be divisive, that don't have the same sort of baseline culture or thinking, and you've got to have the ability to be able to move them on. Now, it still opens up a position for another person to come and fill. The idea that people flip through staff because it's somehow good for their business to move them over and turn them over quickly is absolutely insanity. It's not how business works. So where there's an opportunity lost for one, it creates an opportunity for somebody else to come and move that. And when you get that right mix, you stick with it. I tell you right now, you pay people well, you give them all the privileges of any good business would offer.
I guess, yeah, I just still don't understand if you can't. I mean, as long as you're also judging those people on their merits and their knowledge and what they're doing for the work, right?
Look, absolutely. I mean, you want people with good values, good ethics. But again, it gets back to the balance between the employer and the employee. What an employer wants is staff that are loyal, that are hardworking, that have actually got the skills to do the job that they're employed to do, and they need a certain amount of flexibility. Employees need a safe working environment. They want continuity of work, and they want to be paid well to do that work. So when you get those two employers and employees understanding the roles of each of them, they are no more or less important than the other one. And you've got to make sure that they have an equal and an equal responsibility to get that outcome. And so we believe that where we're heading with building our living wage from the bottom up, by ensuring that employers treat their employees in the right manner, that we've got a safe working environment for them to be in, we are much better off for that. So that's where we're heading to, and that's where this bill has essentially got us to.
That was Deputy Leader Fletcher Tabateau from the New Zealand First Party.